Chapter 21.
Why can't I go?
Rylan asked me for the 100,000th time as he watched me pack forlornly from his position on the side of his bed. Since I was mostly recovered, the Okoba people moved me into the guest suite Rylan had been staying in since we got here. It was a bit bigger than my sick room, with two beds and two wardrobes full of modest clothes we were allowed to use. In lieu of answering his question, I pointed to a spot of dried blood that had dribbled onto his light gray tunic after his incredible coughing fit. That's why.
But I feel fine, he argued. I just laughed too hard. It happens to everyone. Who says this is that stupid curse thing?
You don't hack up blood for nothing, I said while I looked over the canvas and twine that came with the pack to see if it was in good repair. Lacuna Village was only about a solid day's walk east from the Okoba Forest, but if it decided to rain at all, we would be forced to stop in camp. According to Madame Morta, rainstorms on Ohm were no joke.
It was the only time it happened, and I really do feel fine, Rylan grumbled.
Elder Elmer told us it's a slow-acting curse, so it doesn't matter that you feel fine now. You're going to start to feel it soon, I explained with more patience than I felt.
But you'll totally help that girl long before I'll even feel it. Watch, he said.
As much as I dig your faith in me, you don't know that for certain. I sighed and buckled up the pack. And I really can't be worried about you while I'm trying to do this. You'll be a distraction to me, and I can't afford that. We've been over this.
You don't know that, he challenged. Maybe if I'm there to help, it'll go faster.
I'm done talking about this, I said with a huff, and slung the pack over my shoulders. You need to stay here where Milo can keep an eye on you in case you get worse, which you will.
But it's a slow-acting curse, like you said.
He followed me out of our shared suite like an annoying little fly.
We've been here almost 5 days, and the only thing that happened was the blood thing.
Rye, I attempted to cut in, but he steamrolled over me.
Madame Morta even said the village wasn't that far away, so she should be there long before I start to feel really bad, and...
He rambled, but I stopped in the corridor and gripped his shoulder. Rylan, I snapped. You are not coming, and that is final. There's no knowing how rapidly you could deteriorate, and your well-being is not something I need to have constantly gnawing on my mind like a pesky little rat. His expression shuddered as his mouth snapped shut, and I knew I'd maybe gone a little too far when he stepped away from the hand I had on his shoulder.
I'll get it, he muttered.
Rylan, I sighed, and tried to place my hand on his arm, but he took another step back.
I'll stay here so I'm not a pest, he said flatly.
I bit my lip at the tone of his voice and tried to figure out how to soften the jaggedness my own worry and distraction were causing me. But there really was nothing I could say. There were times I needed to put my foot down for his well-being, and I didn't need to explain myself to him. He just had to deal with it, and when it came to something this serious, I was worried if I showed any signs of weakness, he might think I was softening to his idea. So I let my words be what they were. I'll be back sooner than you think, I promised, and ruffled his hair like usual. But the gesture was awkward and forced.
Okay,
he said. And before I could say anything else, he turned stiffly on his heels and went back to our room. I watched him go with a gusty sigh. Parenting angsty teenagers was never a walk in the park, but I loved him enough to endure the attitude and do what I had to for his own good.
They might not appreciate our decision for them now, but in time they will.
Madame Morta's sage-like voice sounded from behind me, and I pulled my eyes away from the closed door of our rooms. I sure hope so, I said as I followed her down to the base of the large tree, where the bonfire was still blazing away even higher now that night had settled in. The 9-foot-tall form of Ozzy stood out easily near the large arch doorway where Elder Elmer was already waiting. I slowed in my approach so I could watch the two slothmen conversing in that strange wordless way the Ohmites had with their gestures and signs. And I hoped I was able to at least pick up the basics, because the journey was going to feel a lot longer if I couldn't adequately communicate with my traveling companion.
Brightwood,
Elder Elmer droned in his worn leather voice. Elder, I nodded. I was wondering if there was a weapons cache I could peruse. I'm afraid when I left home, I left without any defenses.
The home folk don't use weapons because they have no need for them,
the Batwoman explained. As if to demonstrate, Ozzy raised his hand, brandished his three sharp sloth claws, and clicked them together to prove his point. Ah, I said. I suppose I'll just have to fashion something like a dagger or a spear on the road. When I said this, I was amused to see Ozzy turn slowly but pointedly on one of his large feet.
Go now.
I'd never seen an impatient sloth before, and the incongruous sight before me made me crack a smile. I guess I'd better follow him.
You should,
Morda agreed.
He may not look it, but Osred can cover quite a lot of ground when he puts his mind to it.
Got it, I said when I spied the big guy waiting at the large double doors that were in the process of unlocking about 100 wooden locks. And he was staring like he could make them go faster if he just glared hard enough. Any other advice about the Land of Ohm I need to know about?
Other than the scourge that comes with the red sky, the creatures of Ohm are docile and either eat plants or rocks,
the Batwoman said.
However, as you may have noticed, everything on this island is quite big, so even though the creatures have no interest in you, they will defend their territories if they need to.
Any aggressive species I should especially steer clear of? I questioned, as I gripped the straps of my pack with hands that were already beginning to sweat. Going out to traipse through an unknown forest with the threat of a red sky event was bad enough, and to leave the sanctuary of the home tree without a blade or my crossbow was even harder. So I wanted to be prepared as much as humanly possible.
All of them can be aggressive when they feel threatened, but especially stay away from the spiny beasts,
she cautioned.
They live under the roots of the okoba trees and do not like loud noises.
Okay, spiny beasts don't like loud noise, I said aloud for the benefit of my own mental checklist. And what do they look like?
They are masters at camouflage, and they are known for their eight legs,
she said. Oh. The little wind in my sails vanished at the thought of what basically translated to huge-ass invisible spiders with noise phobias. Awesome.
Do not fret,
the Batwoman said.
Ozzy is good at identifying their nests.
Good for him, but I'm not sure what good that does me since he doesn't seem to like me all that much, I said as we both watched the Slothman snort at me over his shoulder with a scowl. Now that the door was finally open to the night, I knew he was telling me to get a move on. I wouldn't put it past him to lead me into a nest just for taking my sweet time.
He is obligated,
Morta began, but I cut her off. Obligated does not mean willing, I said with an arched eyebrow. And she conceded the point with a chuckle.
He is cantankerous at times, but he is loyal to a fault,
she assured me with a matronly pat on my elbow.
The only other advice I have for you is try not to get separated in the mist. It has a tendency to play tricks on even the sharpest minds.
Take care of Rylan for me, I said, and she nodded her white head.
He is in good hands,
she vowed. Thank you, I said, and with a final glance at Elder Elmer's serene face, I turned and followed Ozzy into the light fog. The trek onward was about as scintillating as I was expecting when traveling with Mr. Grumpy through a landscape I could hardly see through the darkness and mist. Logically, I understood the need to get as quick of a start as possible due to Rylan's deteriorating condition, but the boredom combined with my natural circadian rhythm was starting to make me yawn more times than I took a breath. About the fifth jaw-cracking yawn in a row, which gained me a dirty look from my companion, I decided to set my mind on getting Ozzy to crack his self-imposed silence. Maybe if he ended up liking me just a little bit, he could help me find a good sharp rock or stick I could fashion into a quarterstaff. So I began making banal commentary as we hiked along. It started out as a steady stream of idle observations that I tried to turn into a game of I Spy. But the Slothman was supremely unimpressed by my attempt to interact with him, so it ended up being a game against myself, which got old super quick. After that, I just started talking about random stuff to see if there were any topics that might penetrate his tough, unsociable exterior. I covered a gamut of things from weather to plants to animals, and then even to cooking, because I thought if he was really related to Arvid, then they might have at least that in common. However, nothing I rambled on about seemed to have any effect, so I gave up and just talked about whatever entered my mind. I didn't know when I caught on to it myself, but at some point my random stream of consciousness was no longer all that random, and I wasn't sure when it was exactly that I started talking about my family. Of course, I described my wives and Amaya first, since I was really missing them. Then I moved on to describing Nada Isle and all things I missed about it, as well as what my two estates were like with Mr. Jenner, the Raccoon Brothers, and even Miss Vella. Nothing seemed to penetrate Ozzy's shell, and he kept up his steady pace through the forest until I got around to talking about Arvid. I didn't notice it at first, but when I relayed the prank he pulled on me with the powerful Omite aphrodisiac dubbed Marriage Porridge, Ozzy slowed somewhat as if he was listening. And when I laughed at the foregone and rather frisky conclusion of that story, I could have sworn I saw the right corner of his mouth twitch as if he was struggling not to smile. I saw my chance and took my shot. "So, you and Arvid are brothers, huh?" I asked. The Slothman came to a deliberate stop and glared down at me with a hint of a growl. "Shh." "Oh, all right," I said as I held up my hands. "You don't have to answer that." "No," he said, and jabbed a claw at the ground where we were both walking. "Roots. Shh." I followed his gaze to the ground to our right, and when I raised my stone light, I was able to see the roots at the base of the nearest tree. Most of the silent monoliths smoothly tapered down to the ground so their roots weren't visible. But the tree Ozzy was pointing to was a different story. Instead of smooth ground, the roots of the tree were bulging up through the ground like veins. My eyes widened when I remembered what Madame Morta told me, and I looked back at the Slothman with realization. "Yes," his gaze seemed to say, "spiny beasts." I needed to let him know I understood what he was trying to convey, and then I stopped when it occurred to me we sort of did the talking without words thing, and Ozzy didn't seem ticked off. The rest of our walk before we settled for the night was spent in silence, but I had the ghost of a grin the entire way. I was confident I could wear him down with enough time, so I decided to give the big guy a break from my incessant chatter. We set up camp against the broad back of a non-infested tree in companionable silence, and I discovered we had a good rhythm. Going by the lack of Ozzy's usual scowl as he tended to the fire, I figured he was chill with my presence, so I occupied myself with honing a piece of that jagged flat rock that seemed to be everywhere. In fact, I actually underestimated how chill my travel companion had become, and I startled slightly when he spoke.
"Arvid?"
Ozzy asked in a way that sounded like he was trying to sound casual. "Yeah, what about him?" I asked just as casually, and made sure to focus on my sharpening.
"He is good?"
I chanced a glance at him and saw him concentrating a little too hard on whatever he had bubbling in the pot. "Yeah, he's pretty good," I said. "I haven't known him for too long, but he's a part of a good group of people I trust." Ozzy nodded slowly as he stirred something that might have been stew.
"He is happy?" he asked.
"Yeah, I think he's pretty happy," I said. "Why do you ask?" The Slothman huffed as he stirred the stew a little more vigorously, like it could help him find the words or something.
"Many moons since."
He made eye contact and held my gaze in a way that felt different than before. "It's been a while since you've seen him, yeah?" I completed for him, and he nodded. Do you mind if I ask you why?
Ozzy
sighed with a frown.
We clash.
Understandable, I conceded. Are you the older or younger brother?
Younger, he droned.
Ha ha, I see, I chuckled. Even though Ozzy was quite a bit larger than Arvid by 2 feet, and at least 100 pounds, it was amusing that he was the younger sibling.
Arvid is different,
he continued in a pensive tone.
Hard to understand. Slower.
What do you mean? I cocked my head, because to me all of the Omites seem slow.
Can't.
He then clicked his claws together a few times and gestured like he and the elder were before we left. Arvid can't sign, I filled in, and Ozzy nodded in confirmation. Then the slothman locked gazes with me in a way that was a bit more intense, and the less I tried to analyze his face for signs of what he was thinking, the easier it was to pick up on what he was trying to convey. He had difficulty among our kind, his eyes seemed to say. I blinked when I received his meaning without the utterance of a single word, and I got excited. It was a type of communication that came almost as easily as breathing. But Madame Morta was right to say this was not telepathy. With telepathy, I could actually hear the voice in my head, whether it was Amaya or even Prosper, my faithful butterfly Pegasus. But speaking with Ozzy was different, because instead of hearing a distinct voice, the slothman's words were felt inside me like a sixth sense. I kept my gaze locked with him and attempted to send something back through our strange connection. Can Arvid talk like this? I asked without words and pointed between us. He cannot. Ozzy shook his head and then gestured with his clawed hand. And so he went away. Mad? I scowled and bared my teeth for a second before returning my face to neutral, so to speak. Instead of an answer, he snorted out through his big nostrils, broke eye contact, and busied himself with serving us up some questionable-looking stew from the small pot over the fire. Apparently, the Omite brothers had a falling out of some sort, but I wasn't exactly sure why. All I knew was Arvid had never mentioned his family, so I had been under the impression he had none. It seemed like a touchy subject, but when I took a bite of the truly awful meal the big guy had prepared, I couldn't help myself. Well, the cooking trait definitely skipped you, didn't it? I froze when I realized what I'd just said and wished the ground would swallow me up. After a moment, a low hissing sound could be heard, and it alarmed me enough my gaze snapped back up to him. The sight I saw made me grin so wide my cheeks hurt, because there was the giant beast of a man with a viciously clawed hand held up to his mouth. And he laughed one of those strange, snaky laughs where it was all air hissing through his teeth. It was probably the best thing I'd seen since coming to Ohm. And when he continued to laugh, I eventually joined in.
It's true,
Ozzy droned and then pointed at himself.
Bad cook.
We continued to laugh a little longer, and I was pleased to discover the frigid ice between us had finally thawed. I felt a lot more at ease with my traveling companion by the time we hunkered down for the night to catch a few Z's. But because of all the rest I'd gotten over the past 4 days from recuperating, I found a rare opportunity to actually get some much-needed meditation in. However, instead of letting my mind drift about here and there, I focused my will on something specific. The dark realm coalesced around me, and when I pictured that mossy shore and that deep blue lake, the clearing where I had my first encounter with the mysterious Lacuna woman came into view. I gazed around for any signs of her, but there was none. So I decided to call out. After all, if she was able to siren summon Rylan and me, then there was a chance it worked the other way around as well. Hello? I said, and tried not to feel stupid for talking to nobody. Hello? There was heavy silence all around at first, But after a moment I caught sight of a ripple in the mirrored surface of the lake, so I approached cautiously and took a seat on a tree stump to wait. I didn't have to wait very long, and it seemed as if I'd just made myself comfortable when a figure with deep blue hair slowly rose from the center of the pristine water like she was the Lady of the Lake in a King Arthur tale. And I got to my feet in a dumbstruck fashion when she started to slowly walk toward me on top of the water's surface. She stopped on the bank a few feet away from me, and I waited for the suspicious look in her maroon eyes to ebb, but it did not. She just continued to glare at me as if I was the one who had the audacity to disturb her, when it was her wailing voice in my head that had been disturbing both me and my kid from getting a good night's sleep. Somehow her standoffish posture irked me a little, and I huffed. "Look, you're the one who kept calling out for my son and me, and now that I'm here you don't want to talk?" I took a slow step toward her, but she quickly skittered back so she was hovering over the water again. The gesture was clearly born out of fear of being harmed. It was a learned behavior, one that told me a little more about this mysterious woman, and my earlier frustration faded. With both of my palms up, I backed away and took a seat back on the stump I was sitting on before. She watched every one of my movements with laser intensity to make sure I wasn't a threat to her, but I merely let her take her time and waited patiently with my hands folded in my lap. Finally, all of my waiting seemed to pay off because the siren woman left the safety of the lake, walked her light green feet onto dry land, and stopped in front of me. When she was no longer over the water, the free-floating effect that had her hair waving gently around her face seemed to vanish, and the shimmering dark blue sheet of her straight hair fell to her knees. I gazed up at her with an open expression on my face, and she looked down at me and searched for whatever she was looking for with those alluring maroon eyes.
"Where is Small One?"
Her speaking voice had a smoky little rasp to it, and the way she accented her words sounded vaguely South African. "Small One?" I asked her, and she nodded. "You mean Rylan?"
"Small One. Smallest One."
She frowned as she struggled with her broken sentences.
"Rylan."
I smirked a little at her overpronunciation of my son's name. But this seemed to be the wrong thing to do because she huffed through her nose, twirled around, and stomped away like she was going to go back into the depths of the lake. "Wait," I said, as I jumped to my feet and reached for her wrist. The woman shrieked like she'd been burned, and I let her go. "Sorry," I said, and backed up to give her space.
"No touch,"
she said sternly. But her delicate face was scrunched up rather cutely, so the effect was a little diminished. "No touch. Okay, got it," I reassured her and took one more step back. "Just don't leave again. I really am trying to help you."
"Need Small One,"
she said and continued to look around. "He's not here," I told her, and she stopped and cocked her head.
"Yes,"
she said with a deadpan look in her eyes that told me she thought I was about as intelligent as a toad.
"Rylan. He close."
"I can call him if you'd like," I ventured. If she really wanted, I could probably summon the kid with our Dark Realm code word.
"No."
The woman made a slashing motion through the air with her hand.
"He come with you. He come, but not here. Where?"
I stared at her as a horrifying realization began to dawn on me. "Fuck," I groaned as I rubbed my aching head. "He snuck out and followed me again, didn't he?" The Lacuna woman tilted her head this way and that, and a pair of ears fringed like fins around the edges popped out like she was a curious Labrador.
"Rylan,"
she settled on, and then she followed me when I returned to my stump in order to meditate my way out of the Dark Realm. "Don't go anywhere, I'll be back," I told her, even though I wasn't sure how much of my words she understood because she cocked her head to the other side.
"Wait,"
she said, and my eyes flew open when I felt the lightest touch on my knee. She was now crouched down in front of me, and she was drawing a shape in the mud at my feet. After a moment, I could see the doodle was a little hut-like structure at the edge of what looked like the forest we were in, based on her rendition of the giant trees.
Yo, and small one. Find.
Find you? I clarified, and she nodded once. You'll be here? She nodded again, and before I could ask anything else, she turned tail and dove back into the lake. I sighed as I closed my eyes so I could return to the real world. And when I opened my eyes to the early misty morning, I was wholly unsurprised to hear a commotion taking place not too far away from our camp. And it was the familiar sounds of my errant and incorrigible son caught up in some sort of trouble with a capital T.